You've just tuned into Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Welcome back to Beyond Your Past, the podcast that focuses on inspiring you to move forward from what's been holding you back in life. Each week, we talk with clinicians, coaches, mental health advocates, and those who've overcome tremendous odds and now use their journey to encourage you throughout yours. I'm Matt Pappas, certified coach and NLP master practitioner, alongside Joanne Suppressi, author, certified coach, and hypnotherapist. In addition to talking with amazing guests on the show, we share practical tips and insightful strategies that empower and encourage you to break free from anxiety, self-doubt, and the negative mindsets that keep you stuck. This is your place to feel validated and encouraged as you take your life back and live free from your past. Greetings, friend, and welcome back to the podcast. Before we get started, we want to take a second and thank a couple of incredible organizations. INLP Center, offering world-class online neuro-linguistic programming and life coach training to people in over 70 countries. If you've ever considered becoming a coach or simply want more information on their programs, just head over to inlpcenter.org. And to Daily Recovery Support, interactive daily group calls in a safe atmosphere for survivors of complex trauma, equipping you with the skills and information you can use every single day in your healing journey. Learn more about this affordable resource and get signed up at cptsdfoundation.org. And a special thank you to you. We appreciate you listening to the podcast and making us part of your weekly playlist. You all are the reason we do this show, and we wouldn't be here without you. If you enjoy these podcasts, please consider sharing this episode with one person who might find it helpful, and maybe leaving us a review on your favorite podcast app. That would definitely be awesome. If you'd like to go a step further and help support this podcast, you can do so for as little as 99 cents per month. Just head over to beyondyourpastradio.com and click on the support link at the top of the page. Your generous support of any amount helps to continue bringing you the podcast episodes every single week. Today, we're talking with Austin Robin, mental health advocate, podcaster, and survivor of childhood trauma, including narcissistic abuse, neglect, and more. Austin joins us to talk about some of her survivor story and to share her experience in healing from complex trauma, to raise awareness about CPTSD, and specifically to share about the importance of how our self-esteem is affected by trauma and the work it takes to reprogram ourselves from the brainwashing that occurs at the hands of a toxic person. Austin also shares her experience in battling an eating disorder that led her to check herself into a facility to receive help, and how that experience was one of the best things she ever did for herself. We also discuss the importance of going no contact in order to heal from a narcissistic parent or caregiver, and how that decision can be one of the most important things you do for yourself. We talk about the process of reframing our negative core beliefs, and the importance of getting to a neutral place first and how you see yourself. All this and so much more during our incredible chat with Austin Robin, starting right now. So, hey, Austin, welcome to Beyond Your Past. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's been a while since I've done a podcast, so this is exciting.
It's awesome to have you here on the show. You and I met for the Mental Health Roundtable through the Mental Health News Radio Network. And so that was super cool to meet you in person there. And I'm glad we got to connect again and kind of get you back on the podcast airwaves a little bit here since the last episode of your show. So before we get into all of that, though, and kind of talk about your story and anxiety and CPTSD and all that kind of good stuff, if you want to take a second and say hello to everybody, that would be great.
Yeah. So hi, I am Miss Complexities, also Austin. I have many names. And I'm a mental health advocate. And I am a trauma survivor. And I try to raise awareness about complex PTSD and the effects of childhood trauma that, lasts throughout your life. Yeah.
We talk a lot about, complex trauma recovery and childhood trauma and CPTSD and sharing your story and all that kind of good stuff. So, you are no stranger to podcasting. Of course, you had a show for a while. And I listened to, I think, all of your episodes, or at least most of them, since we had met back several months back, which was super cool. So I definitely enjoyed it. So if you want to start, basically, we can talk about whatever part of your story you'd like to share, or something about complex PTSD that you want to talk about, or anxiety. We'll just kind of run with it and see where the conversation takes us.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, you can hear like the in-depth, nitty-gritty, down and dirty part of my story on Complexity's podcast. And I think we did like 34 episodes. I did it with my partner, who is now becoming my ex-partner. It was a really wonderful experience. Like, podcasting brought my recovery to a whole new level. I've been in recovery from complex PTSD and from a really weird eating disorder since 6 years ago. So I've been doing it for 6 years. And I just finally got to the point about 2 years ago, a year ago. This summer would be a year since I started podcasting. And yeah, I think it does like bring you to that next level of being like, okay, I've done this recovery work. I've done this recovery work. Now I can share and I can put it out there and I can be, you know, kind of like an open book for other people, and I can raise awareness in a way that I wasn't able to do previously in my recovery. And yeah, so basic recovery, basic backstory on me. I claim to be the survivor of 28 years of abuse, and I was abandoned and neglected. I spent most of my childhood alone in a room. My mom was very ill, and then after she passed when I was 10, I went to live with my father, who is a narcissistic sociopath. So that was a long 7 years in hell with him. And then I ran away at 17 and tried to support myself as much as possible. My mom's family was very you know, like, I'm going to say they're narcissistic, but not in a malicious way like my dad was. It was more of a, like, I'm from the South. It's very, it's just a whole new world down there. And they were very, like, we don't want to talk about the drama and the pain of our life. So a lot of things were hidden from me, and a lot of things were basically just lied. I was lied to for 28 years about, you know, how my mom died, about things that went on with my dad, and about how, you know, basically just how my life occurred. You know, I was just, a lot of things were hidden from me. And yeah, so it was just a lot of psychological abuse, psychological torture. And I think I'm about to turn 32. So it's been, I went no contact with my dad about 6 years ago, and that's been wonderful. It's really great to not have, you know, narcissists in your life. And then I had to stop contact with my mom's family about 3 years ago. They're just kind of like those toxic people that they don't want to heal, and they want to just like dump negativity on you all the time. And that's not really the direction I wanted to go in my life. I wanted to break the cycle of abuse so that it didn't go to my kids and that it ended with me. And so I just cut out my whole family. And, you know, it's extreme, I guess some people would say, but it was definitely the best thing I've ever done. It's why I'm alive today, why I'm in recovery, why I'm sober, why I maintain a healthy weight. Because I can't do those things when I'm in communication or having relationships with my abusive family. So, and now we're here. And now I'm going through a divorce, which you said you want to talk about anxiety. There's nothing like a divorce to bring up all that fucking anxiety.
I know, right? I've been down that road twice, so believe me, I get it. Yeah, I definitely want to talk about the anxiety part of that. But just to back up for a second, you mentioned something that is huge when you're healing from complex trauma, when you're huge, you know, it's huge in healing from any, you know, toxic relationships and whatnot. And that is the boundaries and going no contact. If you can maybe talk a little bit about the struggle of deciding to do that, and maybe kind of the inner battle inside you of,
oh, yeah,
I want to have relationships with these people. I should be able to, but I can't because they're toxic. And that kind of paradox in your head can really can really screw with your head and make going no contact difficult. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I did a whole like hour long episode about this on the podcast. If you want more details, I go into like the really deep shit there. But a quick overview. So I've been institutionalized twice for my eating disorder because I was dying, and I checked myself in, and honestly, that I went for eight weeks, and then I went back for 10 weeks. Best decision of my life. You know, only reason I'm here today is because I checked myself in. And I'm a huge advocate for getting the help that you need. The first time I checked myself in, my father actually like tracked down what hospital I was at, and started contacting my therapist and saying, like, leaving messages like, you know, there's two sides to every story. And just because she's saying that this happened, you know, you should hear my side, and, you know, you can't trust what she's saying, da, 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 just crazy narcissistic shit. And my therapist was like, you know, I've been doing this for 30 years, and I've never had a parent like go that crazy, you know, like have to defend themselves in a situation where he didn't even know. Like, I didn't tell him that I was going into the hospital. We didn't obviously have a good relationship. He just found out about it somehow and tracked me down, which is kind of scary. So in talks with my therapist about that, I realized, like, you know, this guy's nuts. Like, this is not what I need in my life. And so I think I talked to him once while I was in treatment, once or twice, and he just refused to take any responsibility for me being where I was. You know, he wasn't able to admit or recognize that he had any role to play in abusing me. You know, in his mind, he was the best father in the world. And so I knew there was not ever going to be any closure. I knew there was never going to be an apology. I knew that he was never probably even going to recognize the fact that he, so I was kind of faced with this, like, well, what the fuck is the point? You know, like, why are we talking? Why do we have a relationship? If you continue to hurt me and you have proven time and time again that you're not going to be capable of any kind of resolution, then what are we doing here? You know, like, what is the point? So I just decided there was no point, and I told him that I didn't want to talk to him anymore. And he did reach out a few times, and my husband intervened and was, I don't know what they talked about, but there was one night, you know, where he like went outside and took the phone call and came back in and said, you know, he's never going to bother you again. And he hasn't, you know, it's been like six years. So definitely best decision I ever made. But it is hard because I'm a firm believer in you can't heal in the same environment that you were, you know, abused in. You can't heal while in relationship with these people. But that's just me. I haven't been able to do it. And I also haven't been able to see anyone else do it. Not that it's not possible. It's just that a lot of times these deep, complex PTSD scenarios happen with narcissists, and most of the time narcissists aren't willing to change or aren't able to see that they've done wrong. And at that point, it's just banging your head against the wall. You know, you're not going to make them change. You're not going to get the apology. You're not going to get any kind of positive relationship out of these people. And the sad part is we're told, you know, our parents are the people that are here to take care of us and to protect us and to keep us safe. And so to change that mindset, that like entire life programming of this is the person that is here to keep you safe and they're the person hurting you the most is a huge brain fuck, you know? And I know many people who haven't been able to rationalize it, and it's really personal. It's something that you have to come to on your own. And for me, with all of my recovery, it has been, I'm tired. I'm tired of being sick. I'm tired of being unhappy. I'm tired of being broken. I'm tired of the abuse cycle. And whatever I have had to do to break it is what I'm going to do. And so for me, going, you know, no contact with my dad was definitely one of the best steps that I ever took in the beginning. And with my mom's family, it was much harder. With my dad, I could see, like, the destructive behavior and the fact that he was never going to change. And not necessarily that he was doing it maliciously, because I know that he was horribly abused as a child, but that he couldn't break the cycle. So it was always going to be passed on to me. And I just didn't want to be involved in that anymore. My mom's family, on the other hand, so that was two or three years later. More things came out that they had been lying to me about, really deep, serious shit, which I go into detail in the podcast. I was lied to about how my mom died, and I was lied to about one of my best friends from high school probably being my half sister, and my dad having an affair, and just all of this crazy, like, really Mari Povich shit that they just kept from me for 10, 15 years. And it just got to the point where, like, I started having PTSD from the lies. Like, every time I talked to them, I was afraid they were going to dump something new on me, you know, some kind of new traumatic lie that they had been keeping. And I was just, I just couldn't take it anymore. And I ended up in the mental hospital the second time after my mom or my grandmother dumped all that information about me having a sister that I knew my whole life, pretty much, and they just never told me about. And I just, it kind of was, at that point, I had been in recovery for quite a few years, and I knew my self-worth, I knew my boundaries, I knew what I needed, and I knew that they were detrimental. And I knew that they were going to continue being detrimental. And it was harder because I knew that they weren't trying to hurt me, but they had made these choices. You know, they had spent my entire life lying to me about really serious shit. And they weren't going to take responsibility for it. They just wanted to get it all out, because I'm sure it was getting heavy to carry lies for 10 and 15 years. But yeah, so it was much harder to say, like, look, I don't want you in my life anymore. But again, it was the best decision for me. And I'm very lucky because I have the ability to, and I think a lot of people with complex PTSD that I know have said this, it's kind of like pseudo sociopathy, or like you can turn off the sociopathy because you were raised by one, and you've seen it your whole life. And for me, when I make a decision, I've made the decision, I'm done. You know, so I can cut people out and I can be fine. Like, I don't have that guilt. I have guilt for other things and I have shame for other things. So I'm not completely a sociopath. But if I've made a decision and I've said, okay, this is what's healthy for me and this is going to serve my best interest, I don't second guess it. And I know that not everybody is that way. And that's another reason why it's harder for some people, because they do worry, like, afterwards, am I going to feel guilty? And I haven't felt guilty because I chose myself. And I know that if I want to be a healthy person, if I want to literally survive, and if I want to raise my children, I have to make those tough decisions. I have to choose my recovery. I have to choose myself. I have to choose cutting the toxic people out. And that's not for everyone. You know, it's hard. I recommend it if you're struggling, you know, but it is a very personal decision that everyone has to come to on their own. And I don't think there's ever a time like, okay, now it's that time for you. We're all here at this point in our recovery where we get to decide, are we going to cut out the toxic people? I think it's very different for everyone. You know, for me, it was a matter of survival. I couldn't eat. I ended up back in the mental hospital. You get to these points and that's when you make the tough calls and you're like, I'm going to choose myself. And that's really what I think when we say cutting out toxic people or going no contact with friends and family, like, that makes it sound really negative. And I think that we should be calling it more of like choosing yourself, choosing your recovery, putting yourself first, putting your health first, because that's what you're really doing. You're not cutting people out. You're choosing you. You're picking yourself. And the byproduct of choosing yourself is these people who really don't love you, don't take care of you, serve no healthy purpose in your life. They give you no positivity. You know, they have to fall away so that you can make the most of your recovery. And I think whenever we call it going no contact, or we say we cut them out, it puts a really negative damper on it. But it doesn't have to be negative. It can be the most uplifting and the most healing thing that you've done for your recovery and for yourself.
Could not agree more. Everything you're saying is just, it's spot on, in my opinion. I agree as well that in order for you to really make positive steps and strides in your healing, you have to be able to remove yourself from a toxic situation or remove people from your life. And as you mentioned, it's not that you can't make strides if you're stuck in that, you know, situation. I mean, there are some people who literally can't leave for any number of reasons, but you can certainly make strides and advocate on your own behalf. But when you can finally come to a breaking point where you either decide enough is enough, or you're able to say enough is enough, and you cut out those toxic people, and whatever that breaking point looks like for you, to be able to say, okay, I'm going to put myself first, and we're going to figure this out, and we're going to try and see how it goes. And it may go really well the first time. It may blow up in your face and you may have to adjust. But I think the point is getting to that breaking point, as you mentioned, of saying, I'm not going to heal. I'm not going to be able to do anything and move forward in my life if I don't put myself first and get rid of these toxic people. So I think what you're saying is incredible. And it's a good reminder for everyone who is stuck in some kind of toxic relationship that you have to get to a point where you're willing to put yourself first, put up those boundaries, put up those walls, get those people out, and say, I'm worth healing and I'm worth feeling better and I'm worth making strides. And these people aren't going to have the control over me that they've had for so long.
And that is such a hard place to be. You know, I definitely struggle with self-worth issues. And I honestly, if I hadn't had my kids, if I hadn't decided that I wanted none of my family's toxicity and abuse to spread to them, I don't know what would have happened. You know, I don't know if I would have cut them out, or it probably wouldn't have happened as soon. You know, it maybe would have been down the line. A lot of my recovery has been fueled by my desire to not spread the abuse cycle to my kids. And so even if you're in this situation where you're like, well, I don't feel worthy of doing this, or, you know, you're not quite there. What really got me through was the idea that I'm not going to spread this cycle. It doesn't even have to be your kids. You know, I'm not going to spread this cycle to people, to the children in my life, or, you know, I'm going to do this for the people who can't do this. Because for me, a lot of times I come up to these really difficult places in my recovery and I'm not enough. Like, I'm not enough of a reason for me to do it. And like, that's classic self-worth issues. So for me, it was a lot of the times was, well, I'm doing this for my kids, also for me. But you know, what really puts me over the edge is the desire not to spread this to the next generation of people.
You touched on something super important, and that is, you know, this feeling of not enough. And self-worth is a big struggle for so many survivors. I mean, I'm not going to say everybody, but I'm sure a pretty substantial amount of people who have endured some type of childhood abuse or neglect or even toxic relationships deal with problems with self-worth. And, you know, it's not always, I mean, yes, ultimately it's good to get to a point where you can say you're doing this for you, but if you're not at that point, finding a reason of saying, hey, I'm going to do this to break the cycle of abuse with my kids or my friends or my coworkers, like, find a reason and just get going. And then maybe you can share a little bit about when you find a reason, something to latch on to. Does that help you in time to be able to see how much you can be the primary reason as well?
Oh yeah, definitely. So the bulk work of my recovery, I spent 4 to 5 years with a really wonderful mind body therapist, and I did do an interview with her on my podcast. And she's just, I mean, like, I look at her and I'm like, you're the reason I'm me today. One of those kind of great therapists. And in the beginning, she was like, I don't care if you're not doing this for yourself. I don't care if you don't believe what we're saying. I don't care I was talking to a friend about this. What was it? It was like, it was taking your negative self views and like the negative self-talk that you have, or the belief that you're less than or not worthy, and bringing it to a neutral place. You know, you don't have to shoot for the stars. You don't have to go overnight to I'm the greatest, I'm the best, I love me, or I am enough. Like getting to that place where you're like, you know, I'm okay. I'm all right. I'm not the worst or the shittiest. You know, getting to a neutral place. And for me, with my self-worth issues, getting to a neutral place was really important. And it took me a lot longer to get to a neutral place, and to be, once I got into that neutral mindset of myself that wasn't constantly me putting myself down the way that my father would put me down, you know, once I stopped hearing his voice, and I just started reframing everything with neutral, that shift into positivity was like lightning fast, and it was super smooth. It was excruciating to get to neutral, but from neutral to positive, and to neutral to self-love, and neutral to self-care, it just happened. It was like smooth, because I think we do want to love ourselves. You know, it's human nature to want to take care of us and to want to trust ourselves and to be whole within ourselves. And once you get past that first level or that first hump of, I'm not going to talk to myself the way that my abusers talk to me. I may not believe the opposite of what they're saying, you know, because my dad always told me I was selfish, that I was, you know, just a horrible shit person. So it was really hard for me to say, oh no, I'm dandy, I'm great. But I was able to, and even in the beginning when I didn't believe, because I did, I believed everything that my abuser said. If you tell a child over and over and over that they're a shitbag, they're going to grow up believing that they're a shitbag. But my reasoning was always like, well, you know, I'm not Hitler, or I don't maliciously hurt people. I'm working to not hurt people. So I'm not like that bad. You know, I think I said that a lot. I was always like, you know, I'm not that bad. And then eventually I got to the point where I was like, you know what? I'm pretty great. I'm pretty awesome. You know? So for me, the self-worth really came into being once I got into that neutral space. And I really think that, I mean, I did CBT, I did DBT, I did EMDR, I did years and years and years of thought reframing and cognitive behavioral therapy to change the way that I thought about myself and the way that I spoke to myself. But once I got to that neutral mindset, then it was so much easier. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure some people can go from negative self-views and lack of self-worth to like having it all. But I could not. I had to have the middle ground of that neutral area. And many times my therapist would say, like, you know, you don't necessarily have to believe. I think I learned how to step back. And I've talked about this in my podcast before, where when I'm doing like mental health work for myself, I see my psyche in like this this science lab, you know, and I'm on the other side of the glass window looking in, you know, and I kind of detach myself so that I can see it from a logical perspective that isn't trapped in the feelings. And I could just see like, okay, well, these are the negative self-worth. This is the negative self-talk, you know? And then, you know, this is what positive self-talk could look like. And this is what self-worth could look like. And why can't we just find like a nice middle area for you for now to sit yourself in? And that way it wasn't like I wasn't feeling the negative self-talk, and I wasn't feeling the lack of self-worth. And then I wasn't striving for this idea of like, I think with self-worth and feeling enough, there's a lot of self-judgment. You know, it's like, well, I should be feeling this way, or this is what other people look like when they love themselves. And I had to step back from all of that and say, well, what does it look like for me? What does neutrality look like? What is, you know, I legitimately hated myself. What does it look like if I just dislike myself? What does it look like if I'm just kind of neither here nor there about myself. How can I move from legit self-hate to just kind of a meh about myself? You know, like how can I get to there? I mean, it's just a stepping stone to slightly less hatred. At least for me, it was like just these small steps I took to slightly less hate myself.
Yeah. And I mean, I've got so many ways that we can go with this, but I want to ask too, you know, if you ever shift back into neutral and kind of go back and forth, you know, between the positive and the neutral. But before that too, or in addition to that, when you see that, maybe that ultimate goal of seeing yourself as this amazing person and you're awesome and you're worthy and all this positive self-talk, and you're like, I can't do that shit. Like,
yeah,
I don't believe
that's
it.
Not me.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Like it doesn't sound like me. It's not me. I don't believe it. So
it just doesn't feel right. Like you're like, I can't believe that about myself.
So being okay with finding your way in those little baby steps to getting towards the middle of maybe I'm not quite so bad, or maybe this isn't quite, you know, maybe this thing about me isn't quite as awful as I thought it was. And maybe it's okay that at some point I'll think that I'm a pretty good person or I'm awesome, but I'm not there yet. So not so much reaching for the stars right away. Now, if reaching for the stars works for you, then hell yeah, go for it. But it didn't work for me. Like I had to reach for something that I felt was kind of attainable and realistic before I went to the stars. Right.
Right. I just remember too, what I had to do for a while before I could even reach for anything was, my therapist made me say, well, okay, well, if you think that you're a selfish shitbag, or if you think that you're manipulative because this is what your dad has been telling you your whole life, then, you know, prove it. Show me how you are a manipulative shitbag. And I didn't have anything, you know, like outright. I could not. I'm a really nice person. Like, I am so fucking giving, and I love helping people. Like, I am literally the complete opposite of everything that my dad told me I was. Because my dad was reflecting what he thought he was on me, you know? So that was a big, big step too of, well, if you have all these conditioned beliefs about yourself and this, like, things that you hate about you and the reasons you hate yourself or the reasons you don't feel worthy or enough, well, let's deconstruct that. You know, what do you do? What was the last thing that you did that was manipulative? Or what was the last thing that you did that was selfish? And like, it was really hard to sit there and be like, I don't do that. Like, I don't think, you know, like I couldn't answer those questions. But that was really important for me. Yeah, it was really, it was hard to like confront that. Because that was really a turning point for me to see like, holy shit, this is how fucked up my brain is. You know, like I literally go through every day believing these things about myself, but I take absolutely no action that would make me that person. So that was a huge turning point. And I think that's a big step for people confronting self-worth and confronting self-hate. Like, what is it that you hate about yourself? Do you actually do those things? Or is that just stuff that you were told that you did that maybe isn't even about you at all?
I can remember my therapist asking me those kinds of same questions when I would sit there. And you know what, to my recollection that now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know that I ever came up with a valid answer. Right?
I would be like, well, this is just who I am. This is who I've been told I was my whole life. And she's like, no, give me a specific example in the last week or the last month, or even she was like, give me an example in the last 5 years when you've done this. And I was like, fuck, like I haven't, like I, that's not me, you know. But then like your whole psyche crumbles because you're like, whoa, wait, what do you mean it's not me? That's who I've been told I was all this time. If that's not me, then who am I? Then you have the whole who the fuck am I part of your trauma recovery.
I sat in the office and she would ask me, you know, well, why do you think you're not a worthy person? Why do you think you're not good enough? Why do you think you're not capable? Why do you think you're not unlovable? And I'm like, lovable. And I'm like, then there's this thing, and then, well, that's happened. Well, that's not really true. That doesn't apply here. What if it's okay to not think that way? And I'm like, you're like blowing up my world. And it is, it can actually be a little overwhelming because you're like, this is just what I think. And then I'm like, well, what if it's okay to not think like that? And I resisted it for a long time. I'm like, nah, she's full of shit. This is not right. This is who I am. And it took that repeated persistence, that, you know, consistent doing the same things asking those same questions, trying to break things down, to reframe it, to deconstruct it, and say, okay, maybe I'm not really all this bad. Maybe everything that's happened to me is not all my fault. Did I play a role in some things? Sure. But am I the sole reason that X happened or Y happened? Well, no, not really. Okay, well then let's run with that. And then you kind of take that baby step and move it in the next direction. So I think that's something I think we can all just, kind of use to our advantage and really help ourselves. Because you can kind of deconstruct that kind of stuff on your own anytime. Like once you've been through that with a therapist,
and you understand that, gives you the groundwork.
Yes.
Yeah, I did. That's pretty much what I used to, years, I would just lay in bed at night, like thought reframing, or I would do like EMDR on myself before bed. But that's what you have to do to reprogram 28 years of your life. You have to, for me, I feel like it is a constant. There was a time where I had to not necessarily reframe, but like fact check every thought that went through my head, every single thing that, like, being the watcher of your thoughts. I had to do that all day, every day for probably a good year before I got to the point where it was like, okay, this has been turned around. And it was a weird turning point too, to be like, I'm a fucking pessimist, or I'm a fucking optimist now, like I actually really like myself, or like I would smile at myself in the mirror, and it's like, the fuck happened? But I like to talk about it like trauma recovery is just hacking your brain, and conditioning is just habits. I was habitualized into thinking that I wasn't worthy, and that I wasn't enough, and that I would fail at everything I ever did, and so it's just changing that habit, that thought form. And it takes time. It's not as easy as changing a habit around, quitting drinking coffee or something, changing your habit to drink tea every morning. That's kind of a stressful, painful habit. But this, you can do that in like a month or two. This is like a year long commitment. And it could be just one thought form or one, you're going to fail at everything you do. I think I spent a year with that, thinking that I wasn't a complete failure. So, like, combating that idea every day in my head, sometimes every thought, well, what is making me a failure? Why can't, why do I believe this? Just that constant dialogue in your head. And it's maddening, but it's beautiful that your mind is this machine, this computer that you can reprogram. I don't know why. I'm not even a technological person, but for me, when I think about complex PTSD recovery and recovering from trauma, I really just see it as a habit change and a computer reprogram. And maybe that's just, it makes it easier for me that way to look at it so detached. But when you get into the thick of it and you think of it as like this big, long, hard thing, it seems daunting, but I like to see it as a habit change, a computer reprogram, and that is doable. People do that all the time. And that, it gives me hope.
Yeah. And I think that gives us all hope, because there is no textbook perfect one end all be all way that you heal from complex trauma. It has to be something that you believe in, something that's relatable, something that you can get behind and follow through, something that's unique and personable to you. And if thinking of it as a habit change or reprogramming your computer, I mean, essentially, right, like you're building yourself new pathways, you're building yourself new mindsets, new habits, you are deconstructing the old brainwashing, and you are replacing it with new, positive, healthy thoughts and self-worth. And so, yeah, I say this all the time that, your trauma recovery, it's your own specific thing. Mm-hmm. What works for me isn't going to work for you, isn't going to work for somebody else. But if it works for you and you're making progress and it feels good and genuine, then do it. That's ultimately the goal, is to heal. And it doesn't matter how in the hell you get there, as long as you get there, or I should say not necessarily getting there, but working towards that ongoing accomplishment of the goals you have for yourself, and realizing that, hey, it's my timetable. And, you know, ultimately I have things I want to accomplish and the way I want to feel, and what that looks like for me is unique to me. So I think it's great. The last thing before we go, and I know we didn't get to talk about anxiety, so I'll have to have you back again because I know you've got a ton of insight on that. But how much, you know, with all the work you've done and things that you've been through and things that you're currently going through, how much do you have to kind of take a step back or shift into neutral now and then when you get kind of blindsided or knocked sideways? You know, do you find yourself doing that, or are you pretty much able to just kind of handle what comes now?
Oh, God. you know, for me, it's really interesting. I know that you're not a woman and you don't have the mood shifts. I was reading an article that said like women's hormonal mood shifts every 3 days, whereas men just pretty much stay the same, like all the time. And this is something I've found, and we're just talking about hormonal moods, like just the science part of your body that, can affect whatever, like, you know, for me, I would look at it like it just heightens whatever's happening, right? So depending on where I am in my monthly cycle, you know, I might have a week where I'm solid, you know, like I'm going through all my healthy routines. I'm going through all my, like, just like I'm solid, you know, and then hormones will shift, man. And it's like, I gotta like buckle down and go back to where I was 3 years ago or 6 years ago. And I kind of have gotten used to that flow of life, we'll say, you know, no pun intended, but that, like, that way that it is fluid. And as a woman, I feel like I am constantly changing my moods, my perceptions, my feelings. And I know men change their moods and perceptions, but hormonally, you know, it's always changing. And so what would affect me one day may not affect me the same a week later. So I've found that depending on where I am in my cycle has a really big role to play in how much I can handle and what kind of coping or self-care I need to do. But I have made a huge effort to really listen to my thoughts and really be present with myself. And I would say in the last year, I've gotten a bit lazy about this, but before that, I was really on it because I had to be. I would not say after 6 years, so I got my PTSD diagnosis 6 years ago and my complex PTSD diagnosis 3 years ago. So I wouldn't say after the 6 years I'm cured or I can go through every day without it affecting me. I mean, it literally still affects every move, every decision, every aspect of my life every day, but it does it in a way that isn't psychologically tumultuous anymore. You know, when things do get stressful and when things get, this is something I've come to lately. So for the past 7 months, my partner and I have been navigating ending our 10-year relationship and starting our lives over. And it has been an amazingly healing and stressful time because I get to these points where these things come up or I get thrust into these scenarios or situations. And it's like, holy shit, I'm handling this like a healthy person, you know, like it's been a chance for me to show myself like how healthy I am because of the responses that I'm having. I'm like, man, if this happened 3 years ago or 10 years ago, like I would be losing it. But right now, like I'm holding it together, you know, like I'm still eating food. Like this is, I'm doing pretty good. So yes, it still affects me every moment of every day, and I still have to do that work. I've actually decided, so it's August now, I've decided to take the rest of 2019. I pretty much left social media. I don't like daily or weekly post anything. I just put up mental health blogs whenever they feel right. But I'm not doing any kind of social media interaction. I'm not making any like big commitments. I'm not looking for work or for school or for anything. I've just decided that the next 4 months is going to be about self-care. It's going to be about spending time with myself and my kids and spending time, setting up a new routine and a new healthy habit for me being a single mother and me being, you know, a single working mother. Like I spend a lot of time working and it's really easy to just, For me personally, I'm a workaholic, and working is my like way to disconnect from myself. And whenever I disconnect, then that's when I fall back into old habits. So I've decided just to take the next 4 months to really like anchor into what kind of self-care routine I'm going to have, what kind of healthy habits, healthy lifestyle I want to create post-divorce. And that was really hard because I wanted to jump out of divorce and be like, I'm going to start school. I'm going to, you know, do this. And like all of these things, like goals and accumulated stuff, like I want to do, go, go, go. But despite how well I'm handling the stress of going through all of this divorce stuff, it still affects me, you know, and I have the foresight now to say, okay, well, I don't want this to be what pulls me out of recovery. So I would rather put my life on a really simmer, a slow simmer right now where I focus on myself for, you know, 4 months. Giving myself 4 months to me feels like forever. But for most people, that's just, you know, it's just a short time to focus on you. But yeah, I really want to anchor into those healthy habits because I don't know if there is a light at the end of the tunnel. I got it into your podcast. that's my saying. I don't know if there's a cure to complex PTSD. I don't know if there is, honestly, if there was a day where I woke up and I didn't have my brain, you know, like if I didn't have the conditioning and then the reconditioning of therapy and then the new lifestyle of being more healthy, you know, if all of that stuff wasn't running through my head, I don't know what it would be like. It would be really weird. I don't know how to live without all of that. So it is what gets me through. And I do still experience plenty of complex PTSD shit, but I feel like now I have a better working relationship with it than I did previously. And I think that's what the ultimate goal for me of recovery was. You know, there was obviously a time where I was like, I'm going to fix it all. Not realistic. For me, it's like, I'm going to have a better working relationship with my trauma. I'm going to have a better working relationship with my conditioned brain. How can I make this work for me in a healthy way? How can I get along with it in a healthy way?
Perfect way to end the podcast, Austin. This has been incredible. Your insight is amazing. And it goes without saying, even though you are taking, you know, the rest of the year to focus on yourself, which is awesome, you've got an open invitation to come back here anytime. This year or next year, all you have to do is say the word because there's so many aspects that we can get into and dive more into. So you are always welcome back, my friend. But if you, I know you are obviously off social media for the most part, but is there a way that somebody can read your blog post or connect with you if they want to right now?
Yeah. So I still check the Complexities Podcast Instagram every once in a while. You're welcome to shoot a message to Complexities Podcast on Instagram. Complexities Podcast has a Facebook page. I'm probably a little less active on there. I have a website, Austin H. Howard. It's kind of in flux, but there is a way to contact me through there. And then there's also the good old fashioned complexities.podcast@gmail.com. I do respond to that. I get people emailing, talking about the podcast, asking questions. I love hearing from people, you know. I love just spewing what I've learned. So I'm always open to talk and it may take me a while to get back to you because like I said, I'm detaching, but, I do, you know, it's not possible to never be on anything, you know? So I do check every once in a while. I try to do it like once a week. So, yeah, I'm always happy to hear from people and I'm always happy to talk to people about this stuff.
Thanks for listening to Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Information shared on this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should supersede the direction of a medical doctor or any mental health professional. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting app and leave us a review. We would sure appreciate it. Also, please consider sharing this episode with someone who may find it helpful. If you would like more information on working with Matt as your coach, just head over to beyondyourpast.com and schedule your free one-hour chat. If you'd like to learn more about working with Joanne as your coach, please check out joannesuppressi.com and contact her for more information. We're always on the lookout for new guests. If you're interested in joining us on an upcoming episode, just head over to beyondyourpastradio.com and contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Talk to you soon.